is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at willuc.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. First Friday of the month, and this is the day of the month that we talk with dog trainers Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel. They are with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana, and they join us on the first Friday of the month to answer our questions about dog care, behavior, and training. We invite your questions, your telephone calls for Jim and Carol. Join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else toll-free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Jim and his wife raise Malamutes, and Carol has a golden and a dude.
That's right.
Right. How are all the dogs?
Mine are fine.
Yeah.
You ever get the feeling we've done this before?
We were having a conversation in the lobby prior to coming. We're trying to remember how long we've been on
the air. We actually talk when we're not on the radio.
Yeah. We don't know if it's 10, 12, or 15 years. Somebody was going to look it up for
us.
Yeah,
we need to look it up.
Yeah.
I'll have to take you out to dinner or lunch or something.
Why don't you wait till 20 years, Celeste?
Yeah. I don't know if we have that long.
I told my puppies last night, I said, just consider yourself so fortunate because you have got relatives that don't have a nice warm house to be in tonight. They're outside in this weather. Well, gym dogs like
this
cold.
Well, the flip side is the Malamutes are just loving it.
They're having a great time.
Whoa, it's not hot anymore.
Yeah. Well, common sense advice for this cold spell that we've got.
Bring them indoors. If you're uncomfortable, today is just a stark example of how deceptive. It's sunny. It's pretty. It's freezing out. This has got to be the coldest I think it's been during the day with that wind. So, if you're uncomfortable, they're uncomfortable. You know, they live in – I felt yesterday – it was so cold the other morning and they get out of bed. They've got to go outside, go to the bathroom. All I've got to do is walk next door. And I thought it was cold. And so I just don't walk next door. I use the bathrooms in my house. It sounded weird.
Into the next room, right?
But, I just leave them out long enough for them to do what they have to do and bring them back in.
Yeah, play inside.
Mm-hmm. Play inside, have games inside. And I still walk mine at night. Now, the other night I was walking and it was really windy. And I was fine, but my face got burned. So, theirs didn't, but mine did. So just use common sense. Yeah. But if you keep your dogs outdoors, which I hope you don't at least bring them in when it's so cold right now.
Yeah.
So.
And the males just love it.
Well, yeah, they're Arctic dogs. This doesn't really bother them. In fact, years ago, I think it was on the night of the record lowest in Champaign County. It was something like 20, 25 below. And we were awakened by screaming, looked out into the kennels, and two dogs were breeding outside in the wind. And I said, do whatever you want. I'm not coming out to stop it. It just doesn't bother the dogs. But that having been said, these are dogs that were bred by Eskimos to withstand extremely cold temperatures.
And you still have to worry about their paws, though, right?
I don't worry about their paws, no. But we give them
Well, you should let people know that don't know you that they're not just roaming around your
acreage. No, they're in a sheltered building. They have straw to lay on. But it's not heated. Malamutes can stand the cold much better than the heat. And that's what I mean. If you don't have a dog that's adapted for cold weather, like 99% of the dogs, you got to take a look at them. If they're outdoors, they have to have shelter. It's not the cold so much. About 5 degrees the other night. I was walking outside in a T-shirt. I was cold, but I wasn't freezing, but there was no wind. And a dog can adapt, or even the Malamutes, if they're out in the wind, if it's a strong wind, will get cold. So they have to have shelter from the storm and that sort of thing. But most dogs can't handle this kind of cold, and you got to watch them. But it's just the flip side of summer. I worry more in the summer with the Malamutes because it's
even when it gets up to 50, 60 degrees,
it's very warm for them.
Yeah. Well, don't you bring them in to the air conditioning then in the house?
Yeah, in the summer if in extreme if it.
You had them in the lot last summer in the basement, didn't you?
Yeah, it's not the heat; it's the humidity. If it's terribly humid, it's hard for any dog to shed heat. And Malamutes are extremely efficient at keeping heat in their bodies. They have specially adapted capillaries and double coats and fat layers and everything, and they're well insulated. But that doesn't go away just because it's summer. So.
And we have such extremes, not just Champagne, but the Midwest, such, you know, bitterly sub-zero cold, and then you've got 100 degrees and 100% humidity, and no animal can really adapt to that and live outdoors and enjoy a nice long life.
Well, in Alaska, it gets warm. It just gets warm only on 2 days out of the year, so they can handle that. But they can also handle extremely cold weather. But even the dogs of the Inuits, at night, they would lay down, let the snow blow over them if they were out on the trail, so that they were kind of sheltered. They were in their own little igloo. So even they needed protection from the cold, or at least the wind.
Yeah. I remember when we were kids, we'd build snow forts and get in there, and it was amazingly warm. You know, if you were in your...
Yeah, and when's the last time we had enough snow to do anything like that?
Not around here.
No. The snowman, this, you know, because Andy's, this is her first true winter.
Last winter wasn't true.
Well, she was just a baby.
Oh.
But seeing a snowman, it was like, what is that? And when we were kids, I mean, you know, there were snowmen. You're always out building snowmen. Of course, I'm from Chicago, but I don't think they got much snow either. They got more snow than we, but.
We just had the big anniversary of the big Chicago
snowstorm.
Yeah,
I got all those pictures. I should have sent those on to you. Did you get those pictures?
No.
Oh, let's see if I still have them.
40 years ago? Is that right?
Yes.
No, I don't remember it at all.
I don't remember. I
wasn't in college at all.
But I got pictures that were, they must have been the same pictures. I had them several times, but it was a disaster.
You've triggered a memory. When I was a little kid, we built an igloo and went in it, and it collapsed. And I had to fight my
way out.
That's
why you're an attorney and not an engineer, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I remember walking out to the, you know, to get to the school bus, my brother and I, and he went down in a drift, and I felt really bad. I was like, where are you?
Where did you grow up?
In Rockford.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Jim and I are from the Chicago area, and anytime we got sent home from school early was a bonus, you know.
But
we got sent home early that day.
Well, you'd look out the window and say, no, it's too snowy to go to school today. And they'd say, no school today. And we went, yay, let's go outside. Well,
even here in Champaign, 30 years ago when I was in law school, we lived out in the country. And I'd park the car about a mile away because when it snowed because otherwise it would be there for the duration. I had a final, and the snow was so thick I was walking, and I must have hit the culvert or something. I went down up to my chest, and I'm sitting there thinking, oh, dear, there's no one to save me. I'm going to be late for the final. It took about 5 minutes to dig out of it, but even in the old days here, there used to be a lot of snow. What has happened?
Well, I had a nice memory when I got those pictures the other day. We had our family dog was a big shaggy dog. And Brown Bobby was his name.
Brown Bobby?
Yeah, he was tan, cream-colored, not as light as Andy, but I still have pictures of him. And we hitched him up to the sled and put my little brother on it. And we all trudged through the snow, and it was kind of, that was fun. There was nothing you could do.
Right.
You know, I mean, you just, but, you know, we were outside playing. You had to go outside. We couldn't stay in the house, heaven forbid, so. And we never minded, and we, you know, we just traveled through the neighborhood, and Bobby was pulling out. And I'm sure that, you know, much as I loved animals, I didn't have a harness, so he was probably pulling it with his collar.
Oh, my.
But he lived to be 17 years old, so it didn't harm him. But
yeah. If you do the dynamics, the dogs pulling a sled aren't really pulling if you have a 200-pound sled and you have five dogs.
Oh, this is just one of those
little
tiny sleds.
They're pulling 40 pounds across. Yeah,
yeah, this is just one of those little kid sleds, you know, with the runners on it that they probably wouldn't even sell today because those runners were steel and cut your foot off. But
Rosebud.
I don't understand.
Yeah, apparently.
Citizen Kane.
Oh.
Remember that
he had his flexible flyer and mm-hmm. he called it
Rosebud. I don't think I saw that one. Stephen King?
Stephen King, no.
No.
No, Citizen Kane.
Oh, Citizen Kane. Oh, I thought, no wonder I didn't get it. I thought he said Stephen King. Or you did.
No, I said Rosebud.
This is the Afternoon Magazine, and
I guess we should drift back to dogs.
Yeah, so. We need to talk about dogs. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area if you'd like to talk with Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Dog trainers Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel join us once a month on the first Friday of the month to talk about dog care, behavior, and training. They are with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. Any news from the club?
I just downloaded the invitation to our 30th anniversary.
That's 30.
Yeah, 30th anniversary. It was funny.
I don't remember founding the club either.
In the article that was in the newspaper, which is really nice, and I was talking to the reporter. And I pulled up our website because he asked me how many classes we had. Well, I said, I'll just go look. So I just counted them. And right in this session, we're offering 17 different classes. And, you know, I thought, well, geez, you know, I teach one class.
Does that include the tracking? And
no, it was what was on our website. Oh, okay. So the tracking class wasn't there. So, it's from puppy kindergarten through utility and everything in between. That's a hugely diverse group of training classes that we offer, so I feel pretty good. And we'll be doing it for 30 years.
When is our 30th anniversary,
March.
Carol? March. Any particular day in March or just March?
What day did you found it?
I picked the 9th, and that's the kind of arbitrary, but that's the stamp date on our not-for-corporation papers that the Secretary of State sent us, March 9th. So I said, well, that's as good a day as any.
It's a long time for a group of volunteers to stick together.
How many members did you have at the outset and how many classes?
Oh, Jim
did
could
you?
Address that.
At the outset, it was fewer than 20. I don't remember. I remember the meetings, but gee, it was so long ago. The core group was probably maybe 10 people. And we, all of us, were training at Decatur because they had a club. And there was no club here in Champaign. And then
they had a building.
They did not have a building.
They didn't.
While we were members, they got the building just as we were setting up our own. I think we did one class at the new building and then started our own club. I've lost my train of thought.
Well, you had to find places to go train and used to train in Mahomet.
Well, the price of gas shot up to like 50 cents a gallon, and we just couldn't afford to drive to Decatur. Sounds like not much now, but back then it was a lot. So we found various places. Yeah, the core group found various places. Then we decided, let's put on a show.
How many clubs are there, do you suppose, in the state of Illinois?
Oh, there's quite a few.
Dog training clubs? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a lot. A lot in the Chicago area. Ours is, I think, for this part of the state, central Illinois, is probably one of the best known, don't you think? Peoria's got an active one.
Capital Canine.
Springfield. But, yeah.
Mm-hmm. A lot of good clubs.
One of the points of the article was, where to find training. Where to find trainers, and mm-hmm. you can look in the yellow pages. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, if you say you want to get a trainer or you want to take a class, and let's say you're not in Champaign-Urbana, and also I want to say that the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana is not the only place you can get dog training help.
No, I'm afraid that's not true.
But talk with us a little bit about finding the right trainer for you, your situation, your dog.
Well, I know that Well, when I moved here, okay, then I think you guys were the only game in town. But I just couldn't wait to hook up with these people. But I went to watch one of the classes first. I'd gone through training facilities in Chicago. I always think that, you know, there's a couple of places you look in the Yellow Pages, certainly, but I think you should always go, and I always invite people to come and watch a class and see if this is what they really want out of a trainer. See what kind of progress the class has made, what kind of dogs comprise the class, mm-hmm. how the instructor interacts with the student population and the other dogs. And I think, you know, I would always, if I were to go look for a trainer right now, that's the criteria I'd use. I'd go watch first before I plunked out any money.
Yeah, but now you have a lot of experience with dogs.
Sometimes I think I do. Sometimes I think I don't.
It's... But for the rest of us who don't, let's say I wanted to have a one-on-one training experience, what kind of question should I ask a trainer?
Well, to start with, you'd ask what method they use. There are probably as many training methods as there are trainers. A lot of people use food. Clicker training is very popular.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing.
You don't see the article. We don't see it here. I don't see aversive training, but I know it occurs. I know it does.
I believe strongly in it.
Yeah, you know that. But
aversive training, punishment training.
Yeah, but harsh. I don't believe in. You have to change your mindset, and I said that in here. You have to reward the behavior you want rather than discourage the behavior you're trying to extinguish, because that makes more sense to a person that's being taught, to a dog that's learning, to the person that's teaching the dog. Because we don't teach the dogs. We teach the people to teach their dogs. Mm-hmm. So this session I'm doing, I hadn't done this for a while, but it's really effective. I'll just either myself or my assistant, if you see something that – you know, that's an improvement over the last week. The dog's doing exceptionally well. They get a little star on their forehead. Now, the dog doesn't know that there's a star on its forehead, but the owner does, and they're the ones that want that star. So they'll do things, you know, they'll work a little harder. They'll make a more considered effort to work with the dog. So, I don't know.
What
my thoughts.
Talk with a listener.
Oh, they hung up.
Yeah, maybe they will call back.
Hopefully.
333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Your thoughts, Hunter?
I'm just laughing at myself. The dog whisperer became a big issue on our mailing list or emailing list.
Yeah, that did.
And I labeled myself as the dog screamer. Whenever I...
Oh, somebody's back.
Oh, well, yeah. I'll finish the thought later.
Okay. Let's talk with a listener on line one. I believe in Champaign. Good afternoon.
Hi. We got cut off a minute ago.
Okay.
My question is this. I have a good friend. I have dogs that have never been permitted on the furniture, so it's never been an issue. She's got two big black labs who are generally speaking pretty well trained. They are students, had terrible furniture. Now they've got new furniture, and they're battling two-year-old lab's determination to think their privilege is still outstanding on the furniture. They've pretty much stopped asking when they're around, but how are there any good measures to take to prevent them from thinking that if the furniture doesn't have a chair sitting on it while the owners are gone, that they are allowed up there? And what can you do?
Oh, you know, I was having this conversation with somebody just this morning at work, and I've never tried it, but I'm going to assume it works. The dogs don't like tinfoil. So, you know, tell them to go out and buy the cheapest tinfoil they can find or the biggest box and just lay tinfoil on the cushions.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't like it because it makes a lot of noise. It doesn't taste good to chew.
Yeah, my thought was sticky tape upside down, but I think tinfoil is probably
that wouldn't bother the labs, But I'd try the tinfoil.
Okay, sounds great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Danville on line four. Hi.
Yeah, hi. Good morning or good afternoon. We've got a 10-month-old lab blue heeler mix that was born and raised in the pound. We've brought her home, and she's really an excellent dog, except we have one characteristic we can't seem to break. She runs outside, and when we walk out the door, she's so excited to see us, she just runs, and we cannot get her to come to us. Once she has come to us and she's settled down, she's a great dog. She'll sit, she'll heel. I mean, it's just excellent, but it's just one characteristic we can't get broke.
When you open the door, she runs away from you?
Well, she's so excited to see us, she just runs back and forth and will not come to us. I mean, you know, we'll offer her food. She thinks we're playing. And we've never rewarded her for that habit. What we will do is we'll just, you know, if we're not going somewhere, we'll turn around, go back inside. We won't give her any attention until she calms down. But it just is a habit we can't seem to get broke.
I'm trying to figure out, you open the door, she's not on lead, is that right?
Correct. We've got a fenced yard, probably a quarter of an acre fenced yard here.
You open the back door, she goes out and...
No, she's already outside.
Oh.
She's an outside dog.
I see. So you walk outside, she's excited to see you,
yes.
She just runs back and forth.
Yeah.
And
when we bring her inside, she's, you know... she's perfectly calm. She's just an excellent dog. It's just this one thing.
Well, when you go out and you call her to you, why are you calling her to you?
Well, we'd like for her to come over, sit down, you know, be able to work with her and so forth, possibly take her for a walk out through the rest of the farm and so forth. You know, but she just, you know, even walking, she loves to go on the leash, of course. We'll walk out with a leash, and she'll still just bounce around and run off and just, you know.
And she's still a puppy.
Is she? I realize that. I'm hoping it'll...
Yeah, she's just 10 months old.
Yeah.
This is one of those, I'm trying to see what the problem is. You have a dog, that's excited. How long does it take before she comes over?
It will take, you have to sit down and be there probably for, you know, 3-4 minutes before she'll calm down and come over to you. I mean, it's just, you know.
Now, does this happen maybe 30 times during the course of a day or once a day?
No, it happens every time you go out the door.
Every time you come out of the house into the backyard?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
In other words, I can be in the house, you know, we can be in the house for a couple hours or something, walk out the door, and she is so excited to see us. She just goes running back and forth and up and over the cave and, you know, the root cellar and just has a big time, just loves seeing us, but just will not come over to us and you know, heel to us, so to speak.
Well, I think it's not the worst problem to have. It sounds like the dog is just, this is just its own greeting ritual. However, it's a classic come when called problem. You can't deal with it when you walk out the door and she starts running. That's no matter what you do, you're not going to be able to train her. What you have to do is get her on a lead, maybe a long lead, let her get far away, call her to you, and give her some treat that's just overwhelmingly good. You know, maybe some sirloin steak, chicken liver or something, but something the dog really loves, and do a few training sessions like that. You have her on lead because she can't get away, all right? And if she doesn't come, you can pull her to you or keep her there.
And we've done that. Our big concern is we've got pasture out here, and we're afraid this spring she's going to get out in that pasture and do damage to it, because she will not, once she's out and running, she doesn't want to come
so
back.
We
tried the long lead, too. We've done that.
You put her on a long lead, you called her to you, and you gave her a big treat.
And she knows she's on the lead, and she'll obey.
Okay.
The second you unsnap that lead, she knows she's free, and she's gone.
I think it sounds like an exercise issue, too. She doesn't get enough exercise.
Well, she's outside.
I know, but she doesn't run around, you know, endlessly on hours on end, does she? Or what does she do?
Oh, well, she'll run up and down the fence barking at the cats on the other side.
Yeah.
You know,
how is she when you take her, when you have her in the house and you take her outside?
If we have her in the house, she's calmed down. We take her outside, she's completely obedient. It's when she's been outside by herself for a while,
yeah,
and we walk out the door, that's when she just, you know, she just, and it's really the only bad habit that she's got. Other than that, I mean, she's been perfectly housebroken since day one. We can bring her in. In fact, on these really cold nights, we let her stay out in the daytime. But at night, you know, we'll take and bring her in, and she's just, you know, just a one. She has no food aggressions. She works great with the grandkids.
I think it's just puppy behavior.
I'm hoping.
Exuberant
well,
puppy behavior.
I tell you what I would do. If you've had her on a line, called her to you, and given her food and like a piece of steak or chicken liver, and you've done that for a couple weeks, and she still isn't coming. If it was my dog, I let her out, I'd run to the other end of the fence screaming, and not screaming, but, in a joyful way, running around and just join the dog in it. And the dog will look at you going, what's wrong with you? And probably come over to you.
I could possibly try that.
In other words,
play
her game.
All she's doing is playing. This isn't a vicious kind of thing.
No, it's not. And I did try one time, and I felt so bad about it afterwards because she really just cowered for me afterwards. But one day I tried to get her to come to me, and she refused to do it. So I basically ran her down to the corner and took hold of her collar and brought her back, gently to, and put her on a leash, thinking, okay, well, maybe if I get dominant over her, she'll recognize that we're not playing here, that she'll come to me. But, she still continues to do exactly the same pattern.
Well, see, then you set yourself up for failure there a little bit too, because chasing her down in the corner and getting her was fine. It kept her safe, but it made her probably not too willing to come to you the next time either. It does. They don't think the way we do.
Oh, I realize that. And it was, just kind of an experiment on my part. I thought, okay, I've tried everything else. I've tried being the nice guy, so to speak. It didn't change the pattern. She was for a couple of days a little more hesitant towards me, which I, recognized, okay, well, that didn't work. Went back to the reward system, so to speak, and just it hasn't changed. And I am hoping it's just a puppy thing, but it's horribly frustrating.
Yeah, it's not a reward. If you have chicken liver in your hand, you're not rewarding her. This is a lure.
Sure.
To get her to come to you. The reward is when she gets to you, you give it to her.
She has a particular, I can't remember what the brand is, but there's a particular little regular, it's not a dog treat, it's a dog food. It's a high-end, expensive dog food, and we use it because she just goes nuts over it. I mean, she just loves it.
Well, that's good.
Well, that's the kind of lure that you need. And
that's what we do. I mean, I carry a bag of it in my pocket, mm-hmm. So as I'm working with her, because I do two different procedures when we're out around the farm buildings. One is I let her run at the end of the lead, okay, which is probably about a 10-foot lead or so, and she runs back and forth sniffing. And she doesn't pull hard. I've taught her not to do that. And then, of course, there's a short lead walk where I have her walk beside me, and she knows the difference between those two. Like I say, she's just perfect.
I don't think you have very much of a problem. I think it's just her way of greeting you.
Okay.
And I think that as she gets older, you got a lab and a heeler mix.
Right.
It's an active, boisterous, exuberant dog.
It's kind of like Snoopy doing that dance.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, she is.
I would just, I wouldn't sweat the small stuff.
Oh, and if you're standing at the door putting your boots on to go out or something, I mean, she's jumping straight up in the air, 6 feet
sure.
in the air, just so happy to see you and ready to go. And
yeah, those are all good
things. You open
things.
The door, she's not at the door anymore. She's out in the yard running back and forth.
Well,
I'd use her.
Yeah, I'd use that food as the lure, something that she really likes to get her to come to you.
What a bundle of love and joy.
Mm-hmm.
What a great thing.
Andy, when I'm getting their food ready, she just leaps straight up in the air.
Yeah.
So I gave it a name because it's just so fun to watch.
Today's garbage day. I went into the barn to get the garbage out of the barn, and none of the dogs got up, not even to look at me. I'd love it if I had a dog that got excited
yeah.
when it saw me.
That's so wonderful when they come to you. And
sure.
It's just so good to see it. Who cares?
The garbage man.
Let's take another call. Listener on line one in Champaign. Hi.
Good afternoon. I think I got a good solution for the dogs on the furniture problem.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's the rubberized carpet runner. You can get it at any of the big box home stores. You turn it over, and it's got the kind of prickly, spiky things on the back side of it. And you just cut it to length to fit your couch or your chair, turn it over, and it keeps my lab off there completely.
That's a good idea. I hope they're listening.
Thanks for the tip. Let's take another call. A listener on line three in Farina. Hi.
Hi. I just read White Fang last week from Jack London.
Oh, yeah.
Are you familiar with that book?
Mm-hmm.
Could you guys comment on your favorite Jack London dog stories, and also what was his fascination with dogs, and just that. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Jim?
Jack London was a young reporter back in the turn of the century. He was a racist, but a racist that kind of fit in with the people at the time. He covered the, I think it was a Joe Johnson fight in 1919, the Great White Hope fight. But before then, when he was a young man, he went to the Klondike. And he didn't really go prospecting or anything like that, but he went up there and met all the people and wandered around, wrote the book, The Call of the Wild. He's not my favorite author, and his view of dogs is just really naive. But he was a very successful journalist and wrote several books. White Fang, I never read. I saw the movie. And
I remember when I was a kid reading Call of the Wild and crying because they stole the dog from his beautiful state in California and shipped him over to Alaska and they beat him. And I mean, it was violent. I think the kids' books now aren't like that, but these are what we had as kids. But
that was
that
probably
story stuck
an accurate.
With me.
Yeah,
it probably was accurate.
Because when. The lower state Americans went up to the Yukon and to Alaska for the gold rush. Dogs were the main form of transportation, and the natives up there had their dogs, but they weren't about to share them with anybody. So they had to bring up dogs, and a lot of dogs, especially on the coast, were kidnapped.
Yeah, Buck was a big, strong.
Buck was a
Saint Bernard.
Saint Bernard.
Yeah, and I remember the part where. Oh, my God, all these memories, the snow in Chicago, the part where he had to pull the sled to win the money for...
Oh, to get it loose from
being
frozen.
Yeah, to get it loose from being frozen and, oh, yeah.
In the movie, Buck is always a Malamute or mm-hmm. a dog like that, but in the book he was a...
Saint Bernard.
Mm-hmm. And at the end of the book, Buck leaves his owner... Because his owner is dying, and Buck,
he's
Buck
dying hears, in the stream.
Buck hears the call of the wild and just abandons
a
his
female Saint Bernard,
which is pretty.
A wolf. I don't know what. Yeah. Yeah, but I remember his owner's dying in the stream, and the Indians slaughtered. Or was it the Indians? I don't remember. Read Call of the Wild. It's better than White Fang.
Okay. What do you say we talk with another listener caller on line two in Champaign? Hello.
Hello. I was calling in. I just listened to the gentleman with the blue healer lab.
Yeah.
I used to have labs, and labs are so people-oriented. I'm wondering if the dog, it sounds like they really love the dog, but I'm wondering, is there a reason why it has to be out all day by itself? My labs wanted to be very close to people. You know, they wanted to be outside if you're with them, mm-hmm. But when you're in the house, they want to be with you. I mean, they would be sound, and they were always very quiet in the house. And it sounds like this dog is, too.
Mm-hmm.
My dogs would be sound asleep. And if I would walk from one room to another, somehow they woke up, and they're like a quiet little shadow. So I'm wondering if the dog needs to be closer to them and indoors, if that's possible.
Oh, I'm sure that's a big part of it.
And so
that's
he might think about that.
Yeah.
If he could, if the dog could be in more often,
yeah.
Or at longer periods of time, it's just a suggestion.
Yeah, I hope he's listening, because I do think that's part of the problem.
Yeah,
well, another way to get around that would be, you know, the dog person solution: get another dog.
Well, that's true too.
And and that dog will run up to the house, and you can better believe the other one will run up too, because it doesn't want to be left out.
Yeah. Okay, just a suggestion.
Thanks.
Enjoy your program.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
Another
Bye.
Listener from Champaign, in Champaign, on line one. Hi.
Hi. Just to go back one, Clark. Jack London wrote two books about Irish terriers.
Oh, hi,
what
Sue.
Kind of dog is that? I've never heard of that dog.
Jerry of the Islands and Michael, Brother of Jerry.
Well, you know, I've not read those.
I've never heard of them.
Well, a lot of people haven't, but he did write about two books about just about Irish Terriers. Very interesting.
Do they abandon their owners while they're dying?
No.
No?
No.
They ate them instead.
They ate them, yeah.
They had a lot of adventures in the South Seas, though.
Well, I'll have to see if I can find that book or those books.
Well.
What was the name of them again?
Jerry of the Island.
With a J or a G?
J. J-E-R-R-Y, Jerry.
And Michael, brother of Jerry.
And Michael, brother of Jerry.
Is that the sequel?
They're connected.
Yeah.
Sort of a sequel, but not a real, not a continuation of the Jerry story, really.
That sounds pretty interesting, though. I didn't know
that.
Oh,
they are. They're very interesting. They're a hot item if you've just acquired an Irish Terrier.
Yeah, he did. I doubt if he made his money off of those books, though.
Well, I don't know. They were pretty popular when they came out.
Hmm.
Because, well, there were a lot more Irish Terriers when they came out, too.
Oh, okay. That might explain it.
And they were also the foundation for one of the top breeders, as we've gone down through the years, said that it was the most expensive book he'd ever bought. It was given to him as a present. Well, I guess he didn't buy it, but it was given to him as a present the year it was published in 1916. And he went on to have his own dogs and his show dogs, and my dogs now go back to his dogs.
Hmm.
Which is just an aside. It's very interesting.
What kind of a dog is an Irish Terrier?
It's between a wire and an Airedale, and it's all red.
Oh, sounds like a wonderful, beautiful dog.
They're attractive dogs.
Yeah,
it is.
And Sue does a marvelous job training them because they're stubborn. If you think Malamutes are stubborn,
yeah, they would be.
And they are.
Yeah,
Irish are really stubborn.
For the average owner, it'd be a lot of dogs.
Well, after you've hit them over the head with a 2x4 figuratively a dozen times, then they start to say, "Okay, I'll listen up."
Oh, you want me to sit? I see. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, you got it. But that's my contribution for the day.
Well, thanks.
Okay, bye bye.
Bye bye.
Thinking of White Fang made me think of Soupy Sales.
Yeah.
No. White Fang and Black Tooth.
Oh my goodness.
Boy, it's old
nostalgia day.
No, I don't remember that at all.
I remember Soupy.
Who's this Soupy
in reruns
of whom you speak?
Why do you say we take another call here?
Sure.
Listener on line 3 in Champaign. Hi.
Hey, I'm hoping you can help us with our rather anxious dog. She is a Border Collie Labrador mix. She's about 8 years
can't.
Old. Okay. Yeah, she's more Border Collie than Labrador in personality. And she's extremely intelligent, very loving, the most wonderful dog, except that she gets anxiety attacks, you might say. And when she gets extremely anxious, when we used to have our Westie, she would, out of clear blue sky, turn and attack him out of sheer anxiety, which could be a very bloody affair, which, you know, has made me really hesitant to do things like take her to a dog park or anything else where she would really enjoy herself, because one would never know when she would, you know, out of the clear blue, turn on the dog out of anxiety and attack.
Why do you think it's out of anxiety that make her do this?
Well, we know that most of the attacks that occurred at home, she could tell we were leaving on a trip, and she would get really anxious. I mean,
attack the other dog?
There's somebody in town that was recommended to us, you know, a behaviorist,
mm-hmm.
Who, you know, as over the period of time said, every time it's just as you're about to leave for a trip, you know, this dog can tell and just get really anxious. There was when she was about 2, I took her to a park with a friend who used to take her dog to run with other dogs, and everything went fine until this corgi, I think, looked sort of sideways at my dog and spooked her, and she turned around and attacked. You know, but you know, it. Other than that, she's a really nice dog, and she's very intelligent. And wants to do things, wants to have some activity, and so you know, when she was 2 or 3, I think it was the last year the dog club was in its old building.
Mm-hmm.
We signed her up for fly ball class. We knew this would be the thing for her, and it took us half a class to convince her to walk over that dark brown rubber mat that used to be in the
mm-hmm.
hallway.
Mm-hmm.
She was scared to go on that.
Mm-hmm.
We finally got her past that, but you know, when we got to the point where they learned how to grab the ball out of that big board, the sound of it, you know, the clicking sound, the popping sound,
mm-hmm.
freaked her out. She dug in her heels, would never do it again.
Mm-hmm.
agility class, there was no hope because she wouldn't even go near some of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And yet this is the kind of stuff she'd love to do. So, you know, here she is, 8 years old. And, you know, we would love to, you know, have her, you know, participate in something, do something where she can run and use all her great intellectual abilities, so to speak, you know, maybe even, you know, learn to get along with other dogs. And we're not sure what to do.
Well, tracking is a good thing to do and doesn't involve any other dogs at
Excellent,
all.
Excellent, Jim.
I'm the word that keeps going around in my brain is pharmacological solution. This isn't the kind of thing you can obedience train out of a dog. It appears that the dog, if it is anxiety and it senses that you're leaving, I forgot what this is called. It's called transferred aggression or something like that, where a dog can't express itself this way, so it turns around and bites. Sometimes it bites people, but not your dog.
No, she's never bitten a person.
Yeah, but that's the kind of thing where the dog gets so excited, they virtually don't know what they're doing, at least that they don't appear to. What triggered it, the drugs in my mind, was the reaction of your dog to the sound of the fly ball, which...
That's not uncommon.
Yeah.
They have to get habituated to those things.
Have you gone to the vet and had her checked out?
We talked about it, you know, every once in a while, but, you know, they said that it sounds strange, but, you know, sometimes it'll work, but sometimes it makes the aggression get worse.
Well, it's like medication for people, too. Sometimes you get a different effect, and I wouldn't let that rule out trying something.
In the past, well, Carol knows more about this, and she studied it more than I have.
Yeah, I find it really intriguing that they can use drugs and successfully with dogs.
In the last 10 years, this kind of let's call it tranquilizers, I don't know what else to call them, dog tranquilizers, the pharmacology for dogs has come an awful long way.
Oh, light years, yeah.
And you might take the dog to the vet, describe the symptoms. They might have something to do, you know, that can give you that. In terms of training, when you're training, you don't train when the dog is doing the bad behavior. You set everything up so that the dog will react and you have control of the situation. This kind of problem just happens so spontaneously and unpredictably that how do you train it out? You might set up conditions that are similar and the dog never reacts the way you want, mm-hmm. so you can't do any training. So, but I think the type of problem you have is one that may be helped by the new kinds of drugs.
Yeah, and she has a lack of confidence. I've seen that, and we don't have that problem in the new building. The old building did have that big brown mat.
Yeah.
And a very narrow entrance.
Yeah, so, narrow entrance, and then there's all these dogs, and some dogs were very reluctant to come into the building, and it took a while to coax them and help them realize that nothing bad was going to happen. So,
and actually, once, you know, we finally convinced her she would not die if she walked over that mat, and we got her not to be scared of the, you know, those cones and things that they ran between. I mean, she actually did a good job until she heard that sound when mm-hmm. the ball came out, and that was the end. You know, and I know when we go for a walk, if it's been raining, you know, there's water on the street, and a car comes by behind her and goes through a puddle, she freaks out. And she'll be afraid of that piece of sidewalk for weeks.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So she'll be looking from side to side, the head, the ears are back, the tail's down, the whole bit. You know, scary sounds are a big problem.
Well, she has an excellent memory. Dogs do.
And you can tell the dog is reacting way out of proportion to the stimulus, and that most dogs don't really react that way.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm saying doggy Prozac might be called for here.
Okay, and let's say, you know, it sort of works. Would it then be safe to, like, take her to a dog park or something?
I wouldn't. No, that would be pushing her too far too fast.
What about the tracking idea? If this
yes.
caller wants to get involved in that kind of an activity,
mm-hmm.
Jim, is there somebody at the club or
we have we'll probably have a session this spring, but do some online research on tracking. It's a great confidence builder for dogs. It's you working one-on-one with the dog. It gives her something to do, and you'll probably enjoy it, too.
Okay. There, we've got to leave it. We're out of time. We'll see you two in March.
What about my dog screamer story? I'll bring it up next month.
Okay. Oh, boy, I can't wait.
All right, I'll make a note of it. Dog screamer story. Thanks, you guys. Have a great month of February.
Thank you.
Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel join us on the first Friday of the month to talk about dogs, dog care, behavior, and training. They are with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana.